Welcome to Mission Critical with Lance Chung, the show where we explore the ideas, strategies, and people shaping the future. For the next four episodes, I'm so excited to be bringing you inside the 2025 Glory Sports Summit, where we brought together Canada's top sports leaders to tackle the biggest questions in the game. From the 2026 FIFA World Cup to the rise of women's sports and more, these are the conversations at the intersection of sport, culture, and impact. Enjoy. From grassroots leagues to the global pitch, Canadian soccer has come a long way. But the journey is far from over. As Toronto prepares to become a host city for the 2026 FIFA World Cup, the spotlight is not only on the players, but on the systems, the people, and the communities that have shaped the game here at home. Kicking off our summit today, our first panel will explore the evolution of soccer in Canada, the unique challenges and opportunities facing the sport, and what it'll take to ensure that the momentum doesn't end when that final whistle blows. The big question, how do we turn this moment into a legacy that lasts? So, joining us on stage, we have Sharon Ballenbach, who, with over 30 years of leadership experience in sport administration and event management, Sharon has overseen major national and international events, including the FIFA U20 World Cup, Special Olympics Canada, Canadian Olympic Committee, and Skate Canada. As a recipient of the Queen Elizabeth II Diamond Jubilee Medal and the King Charles III Coronation Medal, she's now leading Toronto's preparations for hosting the FIFA World Cup 2026. No small feat. A round of applause, please, for Sharon. We also have Marcus Hansen, who is the founder and CEO of First Touch Football Canada, a digital sports media and events company that creates exposure opportunities for Canadian soccer players through combines, showcase tournaments, and community events. Through his work, Marcus has helped athletes earn scholarships to schools like Harvard, UCLA, and Syracuse, along with opportunities with clubs like Toronto FC, CF Montreal, Whitecaps FC, and teams across Europe. A round of applause for Marcus. Now, we also have Dwayne Dero de Rosario, who is a proud Scarborough native and one of Canada's most decorated and influential soccer figures, with a career spanning nearly two decades at the highest levels of international and club football. Please welcome four-time Canadian Player of the Year, Dwayne de Rosario. And finally, our moderator, Ellen Hislop, is the co-founder and head of content and audience at The Gist, a fan-first sports media brand that has reinvented the dialogue around sports by providing equal coverage to women's and men's sports. Big round of applause. Ellen, over to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lance. We are so excited to be here talking about soccer with our Britney Spears mics. Very excited. This is what we have today. We have a lot of questions for these three lovely panelists, and we're going to make sure that there's time at the end for audience questions, too. So make sure you're thinking about them as we're asking questions as well. Dwayne, I want to start off with you. You had a big round of applause to kick things off. You've lived the evolution of Canadian soccer firsthand, from growing up in Scarborough to becoming one of this country's most decorated players. Looking back, I'm really curious at what were some of the defining moments or structural gaps that shaped or stalled your path in Canadian soccer?
Well, that's a loaded question. That's a loaded answer.
We're getting into it.
But first, I just want to thank Glory for putting on this amazing event. Thank you, guys. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me, for all the sponsors to make this possible. We're in an exciting time of soccer in this country, a space that we've never imagined, or I've never imagined, or even dreaming of, to having the World Cup come right at our doorsteps, at our front door. And the impact that it's going to have is going to be tremendously massive and huge in so many different environments and areas of business and growth and development. But as a young kid growing up in Scarborough, playing soccer, that was a surprise to a lot of people. That when you tell them you want to take soccer and go to the next level and play professional, they'll say, well, why aren't you on ice and picking up a hockey stick? Because there was no outlets, right? There was absolutely no outlets. And the work that you're doing, Chris, and with FTF and the growth and exposure, just creates more of an environment, more of a platform for kids to take the game to the next level and use soccer as a vehicle to change life, to create impact, and to help out their community. With the World Cup coming, that expands that even further for kids aspiring now to want to play at the next level, which means more resources, better opportunities, the doors open for businesses to help support that. You mentioned legacy, importantly, and creating a legacy that's not only for after the World Cup, but for many generations to come, that's sustainable. And that's something that I really thrive through my Dero Foundation and through my soccer academy, is to create opportunities and platforms where kids like myself that want to take the game to the next level could follow those dreams and aspirations, whether that's a professional route or college and university, but most importantly, using sports to create better serving citizens in our community, better leaders, better role models, better human beings, ultimately. And I think that's the power and the impact that not only soccer has, but sport has. And I'm firsthand an example of that, having raised in a inner city community in government housing. It was sports that helped me change my life. It was sports that kept me somewhat grounded, somewhat out of trouble, but most importantly, it's something that I always resorted to feel like I belonged, to make me feel important. And there's still so many kids throughout our communities, throughout these environments, that desperately need help. And I think one thing that is very important is with the growth of soccer in this country, that we don't just look at the financial gain, that mm-hmm. we also look at supporting these communities and kids within these communities, because then we'll be missing out the next Dwayne D'Arzero, we'll be missing out the next Alfonso Davies, the next Jonathan Davids, and a lot of other kids, Julian de Guzman's, that have stemmed from these environments in these communities. So it's our goal. I know Sharon has a great team that she's leading, that's really focused on making sure that that's a major focus. And my goal is to help her with that. We have a great task ahead of us. But it's like symposiums like this, it's like environments like this, that we could spread that awareness to help grow the game and make everyone aware that, yes, there is great opportunity regarding the business side of it, but there's even a greater opportunity to having a long-lasting impact with youth across Canada.
Hit the nail on the head, and we all know, I think that soccer is the greatest sport in the world, but that sports really do help kids with their self-esteem. We know that women who play sports also become women who lead, and so we're thinking about the next Alfonso Davies, but also the next Diana Matheson, who's here today too. Yeah. And you teed up Sharon really nicely, so thank you so much for that transition. So Sharon, Toronto is set to be on the global stage in 2026. We are all so excited. When it comes to building a World Cup that resonates beyond the 90 minutes on the pitch, what are you most focused on? And you touched on some of the processes and the structure already, Dwayne, but what are the levers that matter most in turning this event into a catalyst and really propelling Toronto to be on that international stage when it comes to sports?
Yeah, great question. Good afternoon, everyone. Thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you, Glory Sport. And everyone who was part of putting this event on. We have a lot of work to do over the next few months. I can't believe it's less than a year out. We celebrated a year to go on June 12th. And I think for me, there's sort of two key things when you ask that question. First and foremost, we've got to nail the event delivery. So event delivery has to be world class. We have to make sure that the teams that visit here, that play here, the visitors that come here, the residents that will take part, the fan experience itself has to be world class, because that is what is going to put Toronto really on the world map as a global leader in sport and events. And so that's certainly part of it. A big part of it that we're focused on is that we need to nail the event itself and the event elements that we're responsible for as a host city. And the second part is exactly what Dwayne said. This has to be more than about six matches happening in Toronto. And that comes with a great deal of responsibility as a host city that's government-led and funded by all three levels of government. There's a lot of accountability there, a lot of transparency that has to be there, as it should be. And so having that legacy, having the hosting of a World Cup in our city be more than about those six matches is extremely important. And that's kind of woven throughout our work. So there will be some things that are very tangible, you know, infrastructure work that we're doing at the stadium, at Centennial Park as the training site, that will be a community use facility after the tournament's over. Our Soccer for All legacy program that I think we'll touch on a little bit more later, but that we're super excited about installing. Our aim is to install 12 soccer mini pitches across the city as a legacy to increase access for youth across our city to have greater facilities and programming that goes with those facilities. But there'll also be things that maybe aren't so tangible. So some policy changes, work we're doing around environmental sustainability, improving how event management, policy work at the city, our volunteer program. There will be thousands of people in the city who will be trained as volunteers that can all be part of work experience and workforce development in our city that creates a long legacy after the event is over. So there's some things that you see very clearly and widely that will be legacy, but tons of other elements of just putting on the event that will be, that we consider legacy, that will have long-term impact.
There's so much thought and intent into that. And you talked about access and thinking about what happens next. And that's something that, Marcus, you've really focused on. Your work is really rooted in access and invisibility. You're helping next generation players get seen. And so how do you think the World Cup coming to Canada has changed the landscape? And what still needs to shift to make those doors more widely open so that soccer becomes a destination and a thing that we all play in this country?
For sure. Well, first off, I want to thank everyone for coming, and good afternoon to everybody. Thank you to everyone at Glory for putting on this great event. So to answer the question, just this World Cup is everything in the soccer community at the grass level. You could look at the CPL. We have Diana Matheson in the back and the NSL. A lot of anticipation has been coming in the soccer community at the grassroots level for this World Cup. It's everything. I know myself, I was a soccer player growing up. When I was really young, and you always watch the World Cup in Brazil, the World Cup in France, the World Cup in Germany, the World Cup's in Canada. I don't think people have really resonated with that yet. And I was in an airport, I'll tell a quick story, I was in an airport. I'm from Montreal, live in Montreal now, and Jonathan David, our leading goal scorer, he beat Dwayne by a couple of goals recently. He's our leading goal scorer right now for the national team. And he was just walking through the airport. Not a single soul knew who he was. And he was on his way to Juventus. He was catching a connecting flight. He's from Ottawa. He's going to, he just signed for Juventus, one of the best clubs in the world. And not a single person in that airport knew who he was. I found it crazy. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to be the fan that was going up to, hey, can I get an autograph? You're about to do something really cool right now. But I think after the World Cup, that's all going to change. Jonathan David will now be a household name. He'll now be a familiar face. So in terms of the lasting impact, I think that's some of the impact that's going to happen. And then at the grassroots level, I think just this will open more doors. We have, I mentioned it before, the NSL is a new professional women's team in Canada right now. They have six teams. The men have the CPL plus three MLS teams, which is 11. When you look at that, but the access to the next Alfonso Davies, or the next Wayne Rosario coming out of Scarborough, coming out of Milton, coming out of Saskatchewan, there's not a lot of professional youth academies right now. Mm-hmm. So that it inhibits access, long story short. We have a play-to-play system in Canada right now. Meanwhile, in Europe, a lot of the systems are, if you're good enough, you go on a professional team and we'll guide you through that path. So hopefully what this World Cup does, get some investors that are interested in making some new teams, investing in youth sport, investing in hopefully more professional academies, which results in more professional players, which results in better players like Jonathan David and who I'm sitting beside, Dwayne De Rosario, in the future. So yeah, that's what I think the World Cup's going to bring in 26.
A quick follow-up for you. I feel like the Canadian women's national team, at least as a fan, has always been a little bit of a step ahead in terms of name recognition when you have people like Christine Sinclair, we already mentioned Matheson, or Kadisha Buchanan, or Ashley Lawrence, whereas the men, it feels like, are almost trailing the women on that international stage. Obviously, they were in the last World Cup. They are breaking into the top 30 teams. How do you see that difference between the men's side and the women's side, and where Canada needs to be on the men's side to get the men up to that recognition that the women have?
Definitely. The women have done an amazing job. You could just look at all the Olympic gold medals, for example. Some people forget we had a World Cup here just a few years ago, the Women's World Cup, not too long ago, I think 10 years ago to this date. So the women have definitely been holding the torch for a while. I think the men are slowly creeping up. I know Jesse Marsh is going to be speaking here later today in terms of what he's been able to cultivate and bring to our men's team. But they're getting there. I think qualifying, so when the World Cup got announced, I think it was 8 years ago or so, or maybe 10 years ago now, everyone's like, yeah, we're finally going to be in a World Cup. That was the excitement. Like, Canada's finally going to be in one because they haven't been in one for a while. And then to qualify for the last one in Qatar was massive. So in terms of what that's going to bring, it's just more fan support, more players looking to push. You see players making moves across Europe and stuff like that because it's a World Cup year. You want to be at that ultimate peak to be selected. So yeah, the men, it's definitely picked up over the last few years. And I think that announcement that it was coming to Canada, qualifying the year before that, it's just going to springboard and hopefully there's more to come.
Very interesting. When Lance opened the summit, he really talked about legacy. And so, Dwayne, I want to come back to you. Legacy, it is a word that gets thrown around a lot, but as someone who's mentoring and building beyond your playing days, what does meaningful legacy actually look like to you in the Canadian soccer ecosystem?
You give me these loaded questions. Huh?
Yeah. I have to give you some hard ones.
I could go on all day about that. Well, I mean, the first thing is creating accessibility. I think that's what we're all preaching here on this panel is creating accessibility first and foremost, right? And creating opportunities for kids in all environments and all communities, male and female. I'm very proud to say, Toronto boasts of a city that not only has a professional women's hockey league, a professional women's basketball league, and now a professional women's soccer league. So that's unheard of in a lot of countries, and much less cities across the world. So we have that here. So we're very forward-thinking in terms of that aspect. It's just creating now for the NSLs is that, you know, as was mentioned, is that, you know, that legacy part in terms of the academy system now where young girls could play in a professional environment, feel a part of the organization, similar to what Toronto FC has, similar to what Montreal Impact has, and we could start developing these young females and young males at a very younger age. So legacy means more opportunities regarding more grassroots development, better fields to play on, better officiating. And what I mean better officiating means getting our officiating more equipped, mm-hmm. getting our coaches more equipped in terms of coaching seminars, coaching education courses, as now the OSA and the CSA is now implemented, which sometimes it's a challenge because I have an academy. And with more coaching education, it requires more costs, right? Because these coaching education programs come with a premium price. So we have to find a balance with my academy is to find the right balance to say, okay, how do we charge a kid something, kids that are, you know, a price that's affordable, but also get the same access and the same accessibility in terms of training, in terms of getting them prepared, all the things that require, not to mention sports science part of it, which is a big aspect of youth development. And I think everybody understands the importance of developing young professionals requires not just on the field, but also off the field as well, and getting them to understand the importance of nutrition and sports science department in terms of fitness education. So it's going to open so many opportunities and so much doors of growth across the professional sports landscape that we've never seen before. And I think that's very healthy. It's very positive because there's lots of environments. If you're a doctor that you want to get into sports, or if you're in sports therapy, you're in sports science, sports education, there's going to be opportunities that we've never seen before. I would like to see soccer be up there in the terms of the respect as hockey that mm-hmm. we show in this country and on the same platform, because the World Cup's here, but we need to really start to really have more of those conversations on our big sports outlet channels, right, like the TSNs, and have conversations around that so more people are aware, because not everybody is educated of the impact that soccer has, not only here in Canada and throughout the grassroots in the immigrant communities, but also on a worldwide stage. It's called the world's game for a reason. It's because every country on this planet has a professional league. Every country in this planet is consistently selling players at millions and millions of dollars. And as Marcus has mentioned, we have a young Olivia Smith, our first mm-hmm. female getting signed of the big, I don't know if you guys know this, but the biggest contract in women history, $1.8 million, never heard of before. I think we could clap that. I think that's, and for for any young female aspiring to play, like, that's life-changing. That's okay. Groundbreaking. And, you know, as Marcus said again, with regards to Jonathan Davies signing with Juventus, you know, Alphonso Davies signing with Bayern. So more of those opportunities are going to open up. More interest is going to be around the game. More interest needs to be around the game. And like I said earlier, I'm challenging Sharon and our board to make sure that we do our job to make sure that that is there and that impact is there and supported. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, that transfer fee beat Naomi Girma's, which was huge. And as a quick follow-up to that, Duane, you were talking about the fees and that kind of side of things being more expensive with soccer now. But one of the most beautiful things I feel like with soccer is that it is such an accessible sport. All you literally need is a ball and a wall half the time, or a ball in the net half the time, in comparison to something like hockey, where there is accessibility issues. So when you're thinking about youth and keeping them engaged and involved at all levels, how do you start to think about sponsorship or the business model side of things so that they can afford to continue to invest in their soccer?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think a positive step in the right direction is that the Toronto FIFA committee has put in place a champions table to spearhead mini pitches across the city in various communities, and I think that's a huge step in the right direction. It's one thing now in implementing these mini pitches, and when I mean mini pitches, 5v5 accessible space, and now it's finding the programs, working with Park and Rec to find programs to fill in these areas, because you don't want to have these facilities just go to waste. Let's face it, when I'm not going to share my age, but growing up in the 90s, all kids were out playing. You know, pick up soccer, up in our neighborhood against your neighborhood, our team against your team, and you just create these environments. Whereas we don't see that as much anymore because of gadgets. But hopefully with these mini pitches and with programming, we're going to start to see that change. And fields around our community, like I said, are going to be safer to play, and grass is going to be cut nice. You know, just our neighbors across the U.S., I know it's a touchy subject, but when you're talking about sports and what they do for sports, it's quite impressive. Like, their average recreational fields are immaculate. You know, when you go there and play in tournaments, there's 8, 9, 12 immaculate fields in beautiful conditions. I just want one of those 8 fields that we can do proper tournaments, right? And we can really showcase, because I can't preach enough, the amount of talent that is in this country is unbelievable. And we really need to create more resources that these talents can be seen, be heard, and create a platform that they can shine.
I'm really glad that you did bring up the U.S., because we were chatting about this actually on our prep call, and especially with the GIST, we are a cross-border company that was founded in Toronto, but we work a lot with Americans and in the U.S., and sometimes Toronto can kind of seem like that little sibling to a place like New York or Canada, to a place like the U.S. And so, Sharon, from an infrastructure and investment perspective, what will it take for cities like Toronto to maintain the support after the World Cup, and to also excite people outside of Canada to really see that Toronto is the best city and that they should keep on coming back here for sports, period, soccer or otherwise?
Yeah. First of all, I just want to say, Duane, challenge accepted.
Get ready.
Yeah, you know we're working on that. So, I think one of the things it's easy to sort of do in this model of the World Cup in 26, 16 cities, 3 countries, etc. I think it is easy to kind of compare. I'm trying not to. And, you know, it's hard to go up against a New York. Duane, you were just there in the stadium at the Club World Cup. You know, you said to Brad, we have a beautiful stadium too, and I think our experience here in Toronto is going to be completely unique, completely different than the big cities that we feel that we're up against. You know, I think hosting this, we're a big city, and big cities need to make big, bold decisions. And I think Toronto made a big, bold decision to be a host in this World Cup. And we're going to have our stadium up to FIFA standards, and it's going to be amazing, and people are going to come here, and this will be the closest any fan will ever get to be at a World Cup match in our stadium. It will be intimate. It will be unique. It will be amazing. And so I don't apologize. I don't think we're up, you know, the small poor cousin in the up against these other 15 cities. I think we hold our own, and I'm proud to be part of making that happen. I think, you know, you mentioned it earlier. I think hosting the World Cup is a catalyst to so many other things. It's about economic development. It's about global visibility. It's about community building. And all of those things are objectives of me and the team that we have working on the event as we go forward. And I think, you know, it's really putting Toronto on that map. And if we think about all the things this city has to offer. Our theme for the tournament is the world in a city. And there's no more diverse city on the planet than here in Toronto. We have something like 200 different languages and dialects that are spoken here in our city. You guys hear it every summer, every weekend in the summer, there's a festival somewhere, many festivals happening. We are a city of communities and diverse communities that come together. And across those communities, we are also a city of fans. You know, there are so many soccer fans in this city. And so the trick is to bring them all together and going in the same direction. And we're excited to do that. We think our theme, The World in a City, captures that. We're a city of fans, we're a city of festivals, and we really want to come together to showcase ourselves on this global stage. It's a unique and amazing opportunity, and I think Toronto will really shine. And as I said earlier, you know, we got to get the tournament right, and we got to get the legacy part right. But, FIFA expects that there will be over, I think it's 5 billion people somehow connected to the World Cup. Through social media, through streaming, watching on television, however it might look, 5 billion people. And if you compare that to, I think, the viewership of the Super Bowl, thank you. The Super Bowl is like 128 million. So put that in perspective. And the opportunity we have to showcase Toronto, to showcase our talent, to showcase our team, to showcase our city is pretty awesome and amazing.
It's such an exciting opportunity. And I do have to just do my due diligence as a Torontonian, though. What's going to be the deal with transportation?
Wow.
We got to know.
Okay, here's the stuff that keeps me up at night. So we all know we have a transportation issue in Toronto, no hiding it. We've built quite a reputation when we have hockey teams carrying their equipment to their games, et cetera. So what's interesting about the work we've been doing, and people sort of ask me, like, where are you in the planning? You know, you're less than a year out. Where are you going? What are the big things, the big nuggets you and the team are working on? And I can tell you that transportation, outside of the capital project at the stadium, transportation was on the first of the list. So transportation is continuing to be worked on, but one of the first elements we brought together. There's a huge team of people working on it. We've brought in a consultant to help us. We have city transportation, we have TTC, we have Metrolinx. So it's one of the things I'm very proud of. I think working on an event like this gives you an opportunity to bring all those partners together and really come together in a unique way where you're being creative, where you're solving problems. And so transportation is high, high on our list. But you heard it here, do not drive to the stadium. Take TTC, walk, ride a bike. That's how you need to get to the stadium next summer.
Hot tip, use public transportation, we love it. There's a really interesting Freakonomics episode on public transportation that if anyone else is a transportation geek like myself, go check it out, it's really interesting. Marcus, transportation aside, you've worked with players from both major markets and underrepresented communities. What systems or support structures are working to strengthen our soccer pipeline and ultimately our national identity in the sport so that soccer can be synonymous with Canada in the same way that hockey is synonymous with Canada? What to you needs to change?
Definitely. So things that are being worked on right now is just making more professional soccer players. I think that's the bottom line right now. Even though a lot of the work that I do with FTF Canada is scholarship-based, a lot to get to the elite level of soccer, you need to be professional at a younger age. So the fact that we have our first Canadian women's team starting up, or Canadian women's league starting up this year with six teams, that is going to make a whole lot of young Canadian soccer players, 17, 18, 19 years old, be able to choose the path to be a professional earlier. So that's step number one. And a lot of those ideas, a lot of those leagues alongside the CPL, they started because of the idea of the World Cup. They knew the World Cup was coming. Those leagues anticipated, you know what, there's going to be a big buzz around the World Cup coming to Canada. Let's activate now and use that as a springboard. So number one, definitely creating more professional soccer players. What needs to change, however, though, is I think more investment in the league. Dwayne was talking about it. He owns his own academy. I see a couple of academy and club directors in the crowd right now. I can speak on their challenges, but what I can say is the coaching in this country, I don't think, has been higher. We have a lot of great coaches in terms of them, how they're developing their players, how players are getting to the next level. But what does need to help support with them is lowering that cost, lowering the barrier to entry. Hopefully there's more investment that's going to be there in terms of youth sports and getting professional academies, getting professional teams in there. But the main goal is trying to make as many youth professional soccer players as we possibly can, whether that's through development contracts, whether that's through full-fledged academies, whether that's just through subsidized costs in terms of joining D-Roar Academy and making that a little bit more affordable so players can get training instead of 2 days a week, because the turf pitch cost $150 for 2 hours, it's now a lot cheaper than that. It would, and there's more access to field, and they're better kept. So yeah, those are some of the ways in terms of how I think the World Cup can help spiral that and get it to where it needs to be for our country.
Are you seeing any generational changes with coaches? And the reason why I ask this is I grew up playing competitive soccer, and half the time it was dads who played hockey were teaching us OISL and coaching us in OISL. But now our generation is starting to be able to coach or to have kids, and then we actually know soccer and hopefully are able to coach. Are you seeing that impact soccer at all and youth at all?
100%. I will use even some of our Canadian women's and men's national team. Diana Matheson's a perfect example of this. She's in the crowd today. She was a soccer player and started a professional academy.
Right.
Like that, or a professional league, sorry. That's incredible. Dwayne has an academy that he started out helping youth players in the East End. And you see more and more that people are getting a lot more involved and starting their own academies, coaching more. Danielle Henry's another name out there. He's doing some really good things with Simcoe County. So there's a lot of people getting involved. I think hopefully that the World Cup after this changes things is now, instead of that player deciding to be a hockey player, they're inspired by this event at 6 or 7 years old, and they choose to become a soccer player. And you hope more of your best athletes choose soccer or over maybe another sport. And I think that will take time, but events like this, legacy projects like we talked about, even as Grassroots, I share when you were talking about with the mini pitches, that will be able to inspire players to just continue playing the game. And the more players you have playing the game, if you look at Europe, the best players in Europe, they technically produce the best soccer players right now. Europeans and Africans produce the best soccer players. Their best athletes choose soccer first. So they're fastest athletes, their strongest athletes, their whatever the categories of a soccer player, they're choosing soccer first. Here in North America, our best athletes are choosing hockey or basketball or volleyball. There's just so
football.
Many options. Or football,
yeah.
Exactly. But hopefully with an event like the World Cup coming, and then things and putting people in place, like we mentioned, people that are investing back into the culture, investing back into soccer after they're done playing, I think will help elevate it for sure.
Very interesting. And knowing that you can get paid to play soccer now for women and you could do so at home is big. We have one more question for these three and then we'll be coming to the audience. So if you haven't thought of a question already, please do so. We'll be coming to you or to the app with Lance. So to all three of you, this is a little bit of a rapid fire. This is clearly what we've learned today. It's a pivotal moment for Canadian soccer. And all of you have a really different lens on it, even though you're still kind of working together. From each of your unique perspectives, what's one concrete action that you think the ecosystem needs to take now to ensure that 2026 isn't the peak, but it's actually the launch pad for Canadian soccer? Sharon, we'll start with you and run down the line.
Sure. Sorry.
Yeah, I think this is, and you, I guess for everyone to appreciate, I don't come to this role as a soccer player. I think that was probably evident. But I love the sport. My first foray into the sport was actually as the general manager of the Toronto site for the FIFA U20s back in 2007. So I look back and think how far the sport has come since my experience in hosting the U20s. You know, our first site visits, we were wearing hard hats and boots at the stadium because it was just getting built. TFC were just launching. And so for me, having sort of seen that evolution from the lens I have from an event perspective, is really amazing. And so, you know, first I think people should applaud how far the sport has come. And really, I think led by the women and the women's team that was talked about earlier on the panel. But you know, now the men are coming, as we've talked about, there's new leagues for women and men. And so I think there's just this opportunity to sort of keep that going. Like that has happened because people are grinding it out to make the sport, you know, better. And each day, the academies and improve the sport and create new access points for athletes in the sport and coaches and officials. And so I really think this is an opportunity to strengthen that strong foundation and really unite the soccer community. You know, I'm learning in this role that there's so many little pockets of soccer teams and leagues and people playing in the city that aren't maybe part of Ontario soccer or aren't part of Canada soccer, but, you know, are still in the sport, passionate about the sport, doing good things in the sport. So from where I sit, there just seems to be a really, we have a really strong foundation now. And I think taking that strength and obviously just keep on going and a real opportunity to now bring all those players together and really unite the sport in going in the same direction.
Marcus?
Definitely. I would say the main thing is just embrace fandom. I think is what I will use. As crazy as it sounds, I know Sharon's laughing a bit, but I think fans are just when you really love something. So get out to your game, get out to as many, go to as many bars as you can and enjoy it. Just enjoy being around people and this event. I don't think we really know how massive this event really is gonna be. If you have a background or a nationality from another country, try to check out their game. Be in support of our Canadian men's team when they're coming out, but just embrace your fandom. And why I say that is, I think the trickle-down effect to that will then be, now you'll start to be what we call soccer people. And then if we can convert more soccer people, then, oh, my cousin who plays soccer might be taken a little bit seriously. Or you might check out a League One Ontario game, which is our semi-professional league that we have here in Canada. You'll start to become fans of the game, and I think that will then grow the game. You can easily say things like investment and all that stuff, but not all of those things we have access to, and not every single person can technically throw out dollars and cents to fund a youth academy or fund something else. But I think what we can all do in this room is embrace fandom, and I think with fandom creates a lot more opportunities for whoever knows where that will come. I would say embrace fandom.
I love that. Dwayne, take us home.
Yeah, no, I agree with Marcus completely. I was gonna say the same thing, just supporting the game, going out and supporting all levels, going out and supporting the Women's Professional League, going out supporting CPL, going out and supporting not only Toronto FC, but also their Toronto TFC too, and seeing what the next stars are like. Go to a TFC game and see that fan experience. It's unbelievable. You wouldn't want to leave if you sit in the fan section. It's something to experience. Snow, sleet, rain, those fans are out there jumping, chanting. It's a kind of fandom. What's the word?
I said fandom.
Fandom. There it is. Fandom. It's a kind of fandom that no other sport has. Yeah. You know, with all due respect to hockey, basketball, and these other sports, soccer fans are completely different. It's excitement, it's cheering, it's passion. Some a lot of drinking in between there, but if you don't like that, it's still the passion that speaks, and I think that support speaks tremendously. But another part of it is also accessibility. Again, and what I mean accessibility means making it accessible to viewers and not having you have to download this app or you have to pay to see the game. Because you don't have to pay to see hockey, you don't have to pay to see basketball. We should have soccer. Soccer needs to be accessible, that when you turn on the TV, you could turn on a channel and you could watch it. And that's how we're going to create more fans. And fans are going to say, hey, you know, I really like that environment there. But most importantly, go support local soccer. There's so much fun, there's so much excitement, and you be the change.
Love it. Very interesting. I think we have time for two questions from the audience, or one? One from the audience, and then we have one from the app. Anyone? Yeah. Got a mic.
We can hear you. Sure. I think I'm very fond of York United and what you do. Obviously, two of my sons played there, and two of them are now professionals, and they went through that CPL pathway. So it's showing that it's strong in terms of a player pathway, that players can go to the CPL and go to the next level. Because I have two of my sons that actually have done that and now are playing professional. I think the focus with York United and the CPL is just maybe focusing on the little details and really doing those things really well in terms of you know, whatever it is. If it's after a game, you're making sure the players are taken care of, trainings, making sure the training environment is as professional as possible. People know that York United is not MLS in terms of budget. Right. So, hello. Did I say something wrong?
You're
trying to cut me off.
Good.
I'm not finished. is that a hint for time? don't have the same budget. So working really within those budgets to make sure the players have everything that they need to be equipped to feel professional, especially when it comes to sports science. It's a big part of it. Nutrition, post, pregame nutrition, you know, pulling players aside and seeing what they need and what they don't need, because at the end of the day, they're still young men. They don't know the landscape of what it takes to become a pro. And going to York United is the first introduction to professional environment, what it takes to be a pro. So really mentoring them and putting them in environments like this. You know, come out here and, you know, hear professionals, reach out to, you know, your affiliates, like maybe at TFC, and have someone come in to talk to these kids. Hey, what does it take to take it to the next level? I do think in a few years, especially after the World Cup, the CPL will be a league to reckon with. I think it's growing very fast. But I think in terms of player development side, I think focusing on those key aspects in terms of the simple things and just focusing on those simple things that you guys already do, but just creating a higher level within there really would help them feel more of part of something in terms of a professional environment, because you are doing a fantastic job. Like I said, my two boys have come through that pathway, so you guys are doing a fantastic job there. It's just really focusing on adding a little bit more details towards of sports science, health and nutrition aspect, and player development.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'll add a few more things in there. I'm very familiar with York United as well and some of the ownership group there. To answer the question directly, I think speaking with the players that you work with is how close that they are to achieving their goal, which is to be a professional. I can use an example of a player, Joel Waterman. He wasn't with York United, but he was with another club in the CPL. And he was with Calvary FC. He made a transfer over to CF Montreal. And he's competing for a World Cup spot. He might play in the World Cup next year. So that's a direct example of someone that's in your wheelhouse that
you could show them how close they are. So like Dwayne was saying, keeping that professional environment, you're close, but things like nutrition, things like how you train after a game, the little things that will help them get that cutting edge will make the difference between you playing in the World Cup in 26 in your hometown and potentially not. So I would say that's where it can kind of start, just showing them how close it is and how serious they need to take things. If they're working with you on the sports science side, like how that recovery is, because if they take a couple of days off, that might be the cutting difference. So you never really know.
Great.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you three so much for the conversation. Let's give a big round of applause to our panelists. Pass it off.
Okay, thank you so much to our wonderful panelists and Ellen for moderating, doing an incredible job of moderating. A big round of applause for them all again.